You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News, and today is a rare day this season in the Pacers season where they don't play either a back-to-back or the day after a back-to-back. They have a two-day gap between games. They have the Suns tomorrow, Saturday, and they did not. And they put the Rockets on Wednesday, so a two-day gap. So today is kind of a day where we can talk about any topic. We don't have to preview a game. We don't have to recap a game, and I'm excited about that because the big topic to me surrounding the team right now is the starting lineup. Is the starting lineup the correct thing? So we'll run through that. I want to talk about the current starter, Aaron Holiday, and why his struggles so far this year. And then look at some alternative potential starting lineups and the pros and cons of making a switch. And then at the end, we'll do some news, including some news about Lance Stephenson, of all people. Can you believe that we're talking about Lance Stephenson already this season? Let's start with the current actual starters for the Pacers. That would be Aaron Holiday in place of TJ Warren with Brogdon, Oladipo, Turner, and Sabonis. We all have seen it. I don't want to get into the numbers of that specific lineup just yet. I want to talk about that in the context of other starting lineups in the next segment because we're going to talk about switches. But let's talk about Aaron Holiday because the only reason this discussion is happening is because Aaron has not played particularly well, okay? And I don't want to take that down. So there's been four games of the season where TJ Warren played. That was the first four games. And Aaron started one of those games in Victor Oladipo's stead, but whatever. And then four games since then where Aaron Holiday started in TJ Warren's place, right? So pretty even split of four games. In the first four games of the season, these sample sizes are minuscule, so a lot of these numbers are stupid. In the first four games of the season, Aaron Holiday hit 42.3% of his shots. Not great, but like kind of what he's done his whole career. In the four games since, Aaron Holiday's hit 32% of his shots, which is awful, okay? So slow start for him, which happened last year too. If you'll remember last year, he was the backup point guard for the very first game of the season. Went 0 for 6 in the first half, and then Nate McMillan pulled him and didn't play him for three games, and he didn't get on the court again until the fourth game of the season, right? And then he went 1 for 6 in that game and 0 for 4 in the following game. So last season in the first Pacers' first five games, he was 1 for 16. So he's a slow starter. We've had this effect with Aaron before. That's not an excuse. That's not a way to prop him up. He's just – we've seen him be bad at the start of seasons before. And I think that – so he's kind of – two things about Aaron Holiday. One is he's a very confident guy, so he's going to keep shooting. But two is he's very streaky. We've known that his whole career, right? He hopped in 2 years ago when Vic got hurt. Not the devastating Vic injury. The very first time Vic hurt his knee when it was just a minor thing holding him out for like a week and a half. He got hurt against the Hawks. Aaron came in and won them that game. He played awesome. And he's very up and down. And right now he's in the down. And he looks awful, right? He went 0 for 6 in his first start, and they lost the Knicks by 4 points, right? If he makes two shots that game, they win. If he shoots 33%, they win. They barely beat the Pelicans. He shoots 1 for 5. Then he's 3 for 8 against Houston. I thought he was okay against Houston. So much of his effectiveness right now is that he's missing. And that seems duh, like the objective of basketball is to score points. But it's so much more exaggerated with Aaron right now because he never gets the ball with the current starting five, right? Sabonis, the ball goes through him every possession basically because he's sort of the linchpin between one side of the floor and the other. He's always screening and rolling. Turner's allowed to make decisions with the ball now, and because he's shooting well enough, they're giving him the ball plenty. Brogdon's obviously been the best player on the team so far this year. He gets the ball all the time, and Depot's also been very good. The three of those guys are averaging 20 points a game, and Turner's been Miles Turner. Those guys get the ball a lot, and Aaron Holiday doesn't, right? In the four games pre-Warren injury, in two of them, Aaron shot eight or more times. He shot 8, 10, 5, and 3 times since starting 6, 6, 5, 8 with more minutes. So really his shooting, the amount of times he's shooting the ball is going down per minute because as he plays with that starting five, he gets the ball way less. So that was a lot of words to say. That's why his shooting being bad looks so much worse now is because he basically is shooting every time he gets the ball because he never gets it, right? He's basically just a spot-up guy with that starting group. And by the way, before we knew about the TJ Warren surgery in that Cleveland game, he was pretty good. He was 4 for 6, hit 3 of 4 from deep, plus 11, 12 points. he looks pretty good that game. And then since the surgery, or since it was announced he was having the surgery, he's been not very good. So I think that he's in a pretty nasty funk, and that is having people question his fit with the starting five. And that makes sense. Guys aren't making shots. Guys aren't doing good in their role. They deserve to be questioned if that's the right thing. So I understand that. I don't think it's fair to reduce his effectiveness in general to hitting shots. For example, he against Houston, this was not with the starters, to be fair, but he missed his first two shots of the game, and then maybe three, then came in again with the second unit and three assists in like four possessions, right? He hit Justin Holiday in the corner. He hit Miles Turner on the roll. And I forget who the third. I think it was to Justin again, right? He had three assists in quick succession. And that jolted the team. That was part of their huge run in the late first quarter, early second quarter that got them the lead that they held on to and won the game. So I think to me that we've seen this with his good game against the Cavs, his better games early in the season. He understands Bjorkman's system. He understands where he's supposed to be, when he's supposed to attack, right? He's got his passing's not great still, but he knows what he's supposed to do. He can be a little bit of a creator, and he's just not making the shot. I really think that's all it is. And then you go to the defensive side of the ball. He's been fine, right? And people keep tweeting this stupid thing to me. No offense if you've said this, but I think it's dumb. Oh, he's not a forward. Who cares? He's not playing forward, right? Like, Brogdon's technically you are what you guard, right? And he is the tallest player I think Aaron Holiday's guarded since joining the starting five, or even the whole season, I think, is Zach LaVine. I think he guarded Zach LaVine against the Bulls. Against the Celtics, he guarded whoever the point guard was, Tremont Waters or whoever the hell they started, Marcus Smart. Against the Cavs, he guarded Sexton and Garland. Against the Knicks, he guarded Elfrid Payton. Against the Pelicans, he guarded Eric Bledsoe. Against the Rockets, he kind of toggled between various guards, John Wall, Eric Gordon, and Harden, right? So it doesn't matter that he's labeled as a forward on the sheet they hand out that says who the stars are. That doesn't matter, right? He's not actually a forward, he's a guard. That's not a thing. Brogdon's guarding the three. That doesn't matter. He's not a forward. On defense, he's been pretty good. He's pretty aggressive in guys' face anyway. He was before the season, so I think he fits what Bjorken wants to do on that end of the floor. I think he's been fine there. His team defense still is lacking. That's, not great and not something I ever thought he'd be good at in the NBA, but his defense is fine. His defense is truly fine, especially in the role he's asked to be in. He's just got to make the shots. And if he can't with this group, or he can't get the rhythm he requires, and that's possible, right? It is very possible that him just taking two shots with this group is just not an effective role for him. Because if he's not making the shots, too, he's not an off-ball threat. He's not providing any spacing, which the two guys who you'd in theory start ahead of him do provide a ton of spacing and have shot awesome this year. So if he's not providing any spacing and his ball handling and passing haven't been what you'd expect, maybe you make the switch to the start of the starter. But to me, I think you give him – well, actually, I don't want to tell you my decision now. I kind of just let it – a lot of it, so you kind of know what I'm going to say. But, that's what I think is up with Aaron Holiday right now. That's what I think of his season so far and his job in the starting five. And he had – again, this isn't like excuses. This is just like he's been bad. Here's why. Can it get better? I think so, but I don't know yet, right? It's been 8 games. Like, every sample size or stat is so fluky right now. Like, if he makes 3 shots in a row, his shooting percentage goes up, like, 8 points or something. That's not real. That's just, like, estimates of how small these numbers are. Actually, I could just tell you how many shots he's taken if I could count and actually figure that out. But he's taken about 6.5 shots a game in 5 games. That's, like, 50 shots, basically. Yeah, so if he makes 3 in a row, his shooting percentage goes up 6%. 6%. That's insane, right? So reading into these percentages a ton is stupid. But anyway, is this the best starting five? Let's talk about that. And that requires pivoting to another discussion about 2 other players. Before we do that, though, I want to talk to you guys about betonline.ag, the official Locked On Podcast Network's betting sponsor. Are you ready for football? Because the NFL is sneaking up this weekend. Colts tomorrow. Wildcard action all weekend long. It's going to be awesome. You can bet on the football action. College football is in bowl season. Championship game coming up very soon. Basketball in full swing, college and NBA. League play going on in college. You kind of understand what's happening with these teams in the NBA. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust to get in on all the action and bet and put your money where your mouth is if you think a team's going to win. That's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account on betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get a 50% welcome bonus. You got the NFL games of the week. You got college football. All the current headlines in sports. Don't sit on the sidelines. Get in on the action and use that promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. So there's the gist on Aaron. And it's not pretty. So let's zoom back. That was the zooming back noise. I'm not going to do it again. Maybe I will. So let's look at a lineup. And that is the Aaron Holiday starting five. It has played 55 minutes a season. That's nothing. That, I mean, your net rating is impacted so much by one possession at that point. They've played 100 possessions. 108 possessions, actually, but I'm just going to round to 100. Basically, the numbers you're hearing, whatever. Okay. That group, the starting five, Aaron Holiday, Victor Oladipo, Malcolm Brogdon, Miles Turner, DeMontis Sabonis has 104 points on 108 possessions. Oof, that's bad, okay? That's not even a knock on Aaron's shooting. Just in general as a group, that's not very good. And it's really that they're not making two-pointers, which is pretty crazy because the Pacers are killing it on twos this season. That group is shooting 37% from deep when they're on the floor together, 42.5% from two. That's pretty bad. Their shot quality is fantastic, 0.56 expected effective field goal percentage. Their actual effective field goal percentage, 49. So some bad luck is there, and that is very plausible in these early portions of the season. Portions was just impossible for me to say that. Portions of the season. So you'd expect a lot of those numbers to get better. Maybe the three-point shooting goes down a tiny bit. The two-point percentage goes up a lot. That group suddenly looks awesome again, right? Like, there was a time right after the Warren injury, I wrote about this, where this group was like plus 20 in 17 minutes. So, you know, now they're minus 25 in 55 minutes. That's how much these things can swing very quickly. Okay, so that's not awesome. On defense, that same group, right? Obviously, they're minus 25. 129 points allowed in 109 possessions. Brutal. But opponents are hitting 50% of their threes against that group. That's not going to maintain. But again, you know, it is what it is. The teams are making the shots because they're open, right? So there's something wrong potentially with that group. But early in the season, stats for all this stuff. So, you know, it's good some games, bad others. But those are pretty bad stats. Let's move on to option number two of the starting five. Justin Holiday, Aaron's brother. Now, here's the thing about Justin. Justin closes games. He's probably been the sixth best player on the team, or maybe fifth best, honestly, because he actually, no, I said sixth best. Warren, like, of the healthy guys, take Warren out. He's been the fifth best guy. That's why he's in the closing five. He fits really well, too. He's playing great defense. He's drilling his threes all of a sudden. I really should have his basketball reference page up now that I'm done talking about Aaron. But, you know, after a slow start, he's canning his threes now. He's up to 42.4% on over four attempts a game this season, right? So he's shooting great. So people always say he could start. Yeah, I agree. He'd be a good starter because he's money shooter. He's a good defender. He fits. That lineup is closing games often. He is closing games often. Not necessarily that lineup because in the fourth quarter, Bjorkgren will often have Justin Holiday in at the four and then have, you know, sometimes Aaron in, sometimes McConnell in, sometimes even McDermott in with one center. But the lineup of Turner, Sabonis, Justin Holiday, Brogdon, Oladipo has 15 minutes, and they've been outscored by 8 points. They have 23 points on 30 possessions. That's worse. That's a much worse offensive rating than the Aaron Holiday group, albeit on a much smaller sample, 76.6 offensive rating. However, that group is shooting 9% from 3. They're 1 for 11. That's hilarious. Like, don't even read into that. And 61% from 2, also hilarious. And their defense has been great. That's a great defensive unit, right? That's why you make this switch. They've given up 31 points on 31 possessions. That's easy. That's a defensive rating of 100. So that group's been, I think that group makes logistical sense. Results, bad, but sample size, hilariously small, doesn't matter. My favorite switch, if they're going to make it, is the Doug McDermott starting lineup, which is Oladipo, McDermott, Turner, Sabonis, Brogdon. That group has 12 minutes this season, okay? They have 33 points on 25. First of all, they've outscored in those 12 minutes the other team by 9 points. That's crazy. 33 points on 25 possessions. Let me make sure I have that right. But I believe that's a 132 offensive rating. Insane. Defensive rating, 24 points on 24 possessions. That's 100 defensive rating. Plus 32 net rating. Ridiculous. So first of all, even before the season, I have been on the record saying McDermott as the fourth starter would be awesome. He's really good. As a fit, at least. And he's been way better as a player under Bjorkgren, too. Who knows what's up with his injury right now? But if they're going to switch out Aaron as a starter, I would be in favor of McDermott because they still can play Justin Holiday a ton, right? That's what they did against New Orleans. That's what they've been doing. He fits in with a lot of groups. But I think he's needed with that bench group. He's part of why they click so well is because they have a lockdown defender, and he's shooting really well. Whereas if they just had Aaron, TJ, McDermott, they would not have the level of defense to run out in transition and be the solid group that they always are. And if they didn't have McDermott, they wouldn't have the shooting to be the offense that McConnell can fly around and set up. So that is kind of the crux of this discussion to me. I think we've learned here that, you know, even if that Justin Holiday group was shooting 33% from deep instead of 9%, they're shooting like 30%. They would obviously look good. And the McDermott groups looked awesome. So maybe those groups are better. You know, I agree with that. And that would be the laziest way to say they should change the starting lineup. They'd be better with the other guy. Sure, maybe that's true. However, then Aaron's back with the bench. And then you have to think, okay, is the increase in effectiveness of the starting five, is that jump bigger than the drop you get in your bench effectiveness by putting Aaron back with that group? So then your bench, especially given the injuries, right, with Warren being out, then your bench guys, and Bjorkman's only playing eight guys, and the ninth guy only plays like 5 minutes if he plays, then your bench is McConnell, Aaron Holiday, and either Justin or Doug. And, as you know, you can keep leaning on Brogdon and Sabonis 40 minutes a game and then get by with whatever group you can. At some point, that is not going to work out. So to me, I think that bench group with just Aaron, TJ, and one of the two wings would not be nearly as good as their current bench group of TJ both wings, because, like I just described, that group's got the shooting and the defense and McConnelly stuff to just be awesome. And with just one of those two, I think that group suffers a ton. So the question is, let's just, if Aaron Holiday keeps shooting as he is now, yeah, they should change the starting five, right? That's an unacceptably bad group in terms of net ratings. But I do think if he starts shooting about as his career averages, which is like 40% from three and like 42% from inside the arc. I don't even remember. Because he's shooting a career high from two-point range this year. Aaron Holiday is hitting 50% of his twos. His career high is 46% his rookie year. So if his three starts falling, then the starting five with him, I think, is the best. Because then you have the best possible bench group and a little bit weaker starting lineup, but the bench is good enough that it's not good. If he doesn't start making the shots, then I think you would improve the starting lineup more than you'd hurt the bench by switching it. But as of now, I think that it's only a matter of time before he gets in a little rhythm. And then I think it'll be better for him to be the starter. And because of that, I think that if you switched him out for Doug, the starters would improve, but the bench would decrease by more than the starters would improve once he starts being able to hit the shots. If he never hits the shots, yeah, you make the switch either way. But once he does start hitting the shots, I don't think that switch is worth it. Especially, and this is the tie it up point, Jeremy Lamb's coming back, according to Kevin Pritchard's press conference last November, so who knows how much of this still holds. But Jeremy Lamb's coming back like late this month or mid this month or something. I mean, it's getting close to mid this month now, so probably late this month. And he'll probably be the fifth starter then, right? He actually has the size to be a wing, and they could keep their bench unit together, right? He'll probably start right away, even if he's not playing that much because he's coming back from a pretty bad injury. I would just start Aaron until Lamb is back. I think that makes a lot of sense from a get Aaron confidence standpoint. Let him shoot his way out of a funk. Your bench is still good. You're winning games still. It's not like they're killing you. He's just missing. He's not turning it over that much at all. In fact, his turnover rate, I think, is a career low. I don't want to speak before I actually have that stat in front of me. Yes, his turnover percentage is 8.8%. That's far and away the lowest of his career, right? So if I'm Bjorkman, I'm sticking with Aaron as a starter until Lamb is back. And if by the end of the road trip or maybe halfway through the road trip, he still is shooting a ghastly percentage from the field, then maybe I make the switch. But right now, I think the starting lineup is what it is what I would continue to have it be. That took me 18 minutes to describe. That took me 18 and a half minutes to describe. Ooh, that was a long one. I hope that all makes sense. Yell at me on Twitter if it doesn't, at TEastNBA. But let's pivot. Let's do the newsy stuff. One is less interesting newsy stuff, and one is the Lance Stevenson newsy stuff. So I'll do the Lance one first. But let's take a little break before we do that, and then we'll talk Lance and expansion, NBA expansion. All right, Shams Charania of The Athletic, Mr. Newsbreaker Man himself, tweets today, veteran NBA players Lance Stevenson and Michael Beasley have signed contracts to play in the NBA G League, sources tell The Athletic at Stadium. What does that mean? Well, that seems confusing that they would just sign in the G League and not with a specific team. I agree. I had to dig into this to get you all the information, and I still probably won't have this perfect, but I'll do my best. This does not mean Lance is on the Pacers or with the Mannets. He could be, but he's not. As of now. There is a draft on Monday, the 11th, for G League teams that are going to the bubble. The G League does a draft every year. But there's a draft then, And a lot of, if you're a vet who has signed this deal, I believe that is what you have to do to be eligible to be in the draft pool, basically. So Lance is in it. Emeka Okafor is in it. Admiral Schofield from the Wizards last year is in it. Shabazz Muhammad's in it. Jacob Evans, Dejan and Musa, two former first-round picks are in it. And, of course, like I just said, Michael Beasley's also in it. So Jonathan Givony had all those names on ESPN if you want to go check that out. So that means Lance is eligible to be drafted in the G League draft. Now, the Mad Ants are one of the teams that are playing in the bubble. So the Mad Ants could pick him, and he would technically be in the Pacers organization. Let's back up one step further, though. I don't know this year how it's going to work because of COVID with just sending players up and down. So I don't know that if he's on the Mad Ants, the Pacers just the G League rights and NBA rights are separate. That's kind of hard to explain to people. If he's on the Mad Ants, the Pacers just don't have his rights. That's not how it works. But they could still sign him, and they have him in the org technically because he's on the G League team. But any team could sign him. But anyway, that does not mean he's on the Mad Ants or the Pacers. And so what there is this year that's interesting is each G League team, this was also reported by Givony, and I kind of had to dig into the rules to figure this out. Each G League team is able to designate what's called a vet selection, an NBA vet selection, who's a player who has 5 or more years of NBA experience that can be on their G League team that can sign directly with the pro team and not have to deal with like the G League waiver process and have their rights transferred around. And if you do get signed to one of those deals, I think the rule is, I don't know this for sure, but I'm pretty sure you aren't in the G League draft. So because Lance signed a deal that puts him in the G League draft, he's not getting a vet selection from any team. So that means any team can pick him. The vet selection, Nick Stauskas just got it from the Raptors, right? So he'll play for Raptors 905. And he can only sign, like the Raptors can just be like, yep, great, you're with us now. And no, there's no waiver process. It just happens. So like, that's how this is going to work in the G League. Very confusing. So some team in the G League is going to have Lance Stephenson if they pick him in the G League draft. I don't know who's going to value him and what the deal is going to be. Maybe the Ignite pick him. Maybe the team with all the young guys pick him. Who knows how that's going to work out. So maybe he'll be a Mad Ant, and next Tuesday we can discuss that. LiAngelo Ball, also in this G League draft. I don't know what the Mad Ants are thinking. I haven't really asked them about draft strategy. They already have some guys under contract, right? So who knows what will happen, but we'll see. But Lance, back in the G League this year, and I don't know if he's going to be able to be sent up or sent down if he's not one of the NBA vet selections. Rule, okay, that's news number one. That's not even Pacers news. It's just G League bubble news. Mad Ants are participating in the bubble, by the way. I believe it's February-March season and then playoffs after that. So good for them for ponying up the money to participate and get some development going. You know, if they're able to, and if the Pacers health permitting, I think they would like to get Brian Bowen and Cassius Stanley down there to get playing time. But again, I don't know how that travel is going to work with COVID if you can just send guys up and down. News number two. This could be something cool down the line. Brian Windhorst wrote about the NBA expansion and how the Timberwolves sale could have an impact on that. The Timberwolves up for sale right now. Glenn Taylor, their owner, putting him up for, I think it's like the third time they went up for sale. So the cost for an expansion team, he says, would be something like $2.5 billion, and that's now more attractive to owners given that they've all lost money in the pandemic. What does that mean for the Pacers? Maybe nothing if they don't do expansion, but it sounds like the NBA has changed their tune a little bit on expansion, and it could be coming sooner-ish to help make up for some of this debt, and maybe you'd get like a Seattle team and a Vegas team or a Seattle team and a Vancouver team, and then like the Grizzlies or the Timberwolves would come to the Eastern Conference. Who knows exactly what the shakeout would be? That's irrelevant. If there are expansion teams, there would be an expansion draft, and I think it's super fun to think about what 5 or 8 or whatever number of players the Pacers would protect, and that's where this could become Pacers news, is if there is an expansion draft. You know, it shakes up your whole team-building plans and things like that. I would not worry about that as a fan if you read this piece from Brian Windhorst. Teams would be adequately prepared and briefed on how much timing they have, and it would certainly change transaction strategy, but I don't think it's necessarily something to cover with the Pacers, but if you want, think of your favorite 8 guys to protect and know that if a guy gets selected, their contract's off the books. But just know that expansion could be coming for the NBA, and the Pacers as a deep team, right? They have 13 rotation-caliber guys in theory. You know, Jakarr Sampson, Edmund Sumner, Keelan Martin even, but not so much this year. I guess maybe not 13, but They have like 12 or 11 rotation caliber guys. They'd have some tough decisions to make at the back there. You know, someone quality or someone young and good would be released to the Wolves. But anyway, read that piece, learn more about what the NBA is thinking and why. It makes a lot of sense to me that expansion would help solve this financial crisis. You know, I think that makes a lot of sense intuitively for the league, but we'll have to see what happens. Anyway, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Suns tomorrow. We'll cover that action come Monday. We'll have a lot to talk about come Monday, honestly, because they have five games next week. The Pacers have five games next week. These two wins over the Rockets and Pelicans are huge because they need a big buffer before they go on this five-game road trip out west. Thankfully, they're first in the East right now. At 6-2, they are tied for first in the Eastern Conference, so that's fantastic because the 76ers lost earlier today. So Pacers rolling, big games coming up. We'll cover it all here on the Locked On Pacers podcast.